Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
Welcome in to One of These Years, our Detroit Lions podcast. I'm Chris Burke, joined by Nick Baumgartner. We have just wrapped up 19 days of watching the Lions at practice and scrimmages and everything else. And how much weight did you drop this week, Nick, sitting out there in the heat?
What day was that? Tuesday, I think, was like the hottest day of camp. Right, like officially, I think it was. It was like 102 or 103
on
the real field, and on the field it was probably like 120. I don't know. It was crazy. So pretty bad. You also mentioned yesterday. You're like, I don't think I've eaten lunch in the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, they kept practicing at like 12:30, so I was like too early to eat when I got there, and then we'd stand out in the 100-degree heat, and by the end, it's like I need to get out of here.
I just want to go to sleep. Yeah,
I always wonder. I always wonder what the players and coaches think, though, and like Tuesday, Wednesday, we're out there sweating, and we're just standing. I mean, they're actually working. Tuesday was a full 2 hours in pads in 100 and whatever, and the media's all like, there was one corner of the practice facility where like one building was blocking out the sun, so there's a little shade, and all of us are huddled over there. I wonder. Like how soft they think we are.
Oh, they already know full well. They probably also saw our punt competition.
Oh, media. Not good. You got a hold of one. The media.
I got one decent one, and then I missed the other one. I kicked the other one off my shin. It hurt more than it did anything else.
Yeah, they did that with us at the end of camp in 2019, and then we obviously didn't really get a chance to do much last year. But I've been trying to argue for the. You seem to think it's a terrible idea. I've been trying to argue for a couple minutes on the jugs to see haul.
Yeah, that's going to just injure someone. Like, that's going to, like, just hurt, break hands. Shout out to Will Birchfield, by the way. I don't think any of us could have caught a pass on the jug. Maybe if we were, like, 100 yards away. I don't know.
I feel like the punt contest could have injured someone. I thought somebody's back or knee or something was going to go.
When they first said we're going to do a punt contest, I was like, they're not going to make us catch a punt, are they? I'm like, that's going to like break my arms off.
There you go.
Something.
We could do that one, too. But Jack Fox boom a couple to you.
God. Jeez.
Well, so we wanted to we pushed back the podcast a couple days this week so we could recap. We're done with our full availability now. They shift into regular season mode, which for us means we get like 15 minutes, 20 minutes at the start of practice where they're just going through positional work, and then as soon as they start stretching and getting into their actual practice, they kick us out and we get our access with the players and coaches either before or after. But we're done with watching the practices all the way through. So, like I said, we had OTAs and mini camp and now 19 days of training camp to be out there and observe everything. And we can get into kind of the nitty gritty here, but just general thoughts on kind of how it went and if they survived not having joint practices. It got a little chippy at the end. And just what your thoughts are on how training camp unfolded.
I understand why they didn't have the joint practices, but I also kind of thought as we went through it, like, man, it would have been nice to maybe see some of that. I think that generally speaking, on the positive side of things, like we were actually talking about this the other day, all of the rookies to this point have done something in camp where you were like, okay, I get it. Like, I see where they're going with that, including Melifonwu yesterday, or maybe it was the day before, I should say, when they were in pads the last time, I noticed. I was like, well, he has come a long way. He looks a lot better in terms of just where he's at in coverage, you know, how he's using the sideline. They talk about that a ton. Aubrey Pleasant does with those guys, and Aaron Glenn does as well. He looked a lot better, and then I got to thinking about it. I'm like, really, all of them to this point, I think we would agree, Chris, have done something that is either proven why they were drafted or in a lot of cases, they've, you know, either flashed more than we thought or right along about what we expected, which is, you know, it could be worse. I would say, right? We've seen worse. So from that standpoint, I think that's been pretty good so far.
You're right on Melifonwu, because he was the one at the start of camp where are you, and even especially back in like rookie minicamp where you were watching, oh, this is going to be a while. Like this is, he's going to need some time here. And that was when, you know, we were thinking they might play him as a kind of safety cornerback hybrid, or given they started to give him a little bit of a look in the slot. And it was just, I think it was all just coming at him too fast at that point.
Oh, yeah,
but now, like you said, I mean, this week, Jeff Okuda was limited with whatever. I mean, they keep saying they're just kind of resting him. It sounds like some sort of minor injury, but and so they had Melifonwu playing up with the ones on defense, and it didn't really look that out of place. And I think what's interesting is, you know, you obviously can kind of see what they're doing with the types of cornerbacks they want. Like when it's Melifonwu and Oruwariye on the outside, you're probably going to give some stuff up over the top, just like you will, I think, still with Okuda. But those are big guys that can cover a lot of ground, and make up. You know, you don't have to be right in a receiver's hip for one of those guys to make a play. We saw Oruwariye pop out a couple balls on Wednesday at that last practice. And, yeah, I think Melifonwu is starting to settle in a little bit. Both the defensive linemen have looked really good when they've been in there. I mean,
really good.
McNeil's been great since day one when he showed up, but Onwuzurike,
right?
You can see why he was drafted higher. You can see why they're so excited about him, because they're moving him around everywhere, and he has been beating offensive linemen from every single alignment they put him in. He's getting into the backfield. We've talked a lot about Barnes. You just wrote about him. I mean, if it's not this year, by next year, he might be. I mean, he could be calling plays on defense by next year, I think, if everything goes
according
to plan.
Wouldn't surprise me at all.
So, you know, you got to be feeling pretty good about where you're at with the defensive players. And then, you know, obviously Sewell's been good. St. Brown's been really good. The one that is interesting is Jamar Jefferson to me, because at the start of camp, it really looked like he was locked in as the number three guy.
Yeah.
And I don't know that that's the case anymore. Deuce Staley even said yesterday, like, this is still pretty wide open. And they've had Craig Reynolds came in. They like, you know, Godwin Igwebuke scored a touchdown last week. So that one, I'm curious to see what happens there, because I still like Jefferson's skill set in this offense, especially, quite a bit. But they've done a nice job finding some guys around him to compete there.
Yeah, I think, and also you heard Campbell talk about how, you know, what does the roster really need in certain situations if you keep a guy like Kabinda, which it seems like they're going to, and that maybe if you go somewhere and you take just Swift and Williams and Kabinda's your third back that day. I mean, that could also be something where they get to. But either way, no, I mean, Jefferson, I guess, would be the one guy. He got hurt, and that sort of slowed his progress. But you're right. I mean, he showed stuff. He was the first one to show anything, really. I mean, when they put pads on, I mean, he was the first rookie that really was like, okay, wow, that was – he did a couple things, right? So I think that progress slowed for him, but I don't think you want to lose him yet, you know? For whatever, that would be a tough one to give up on. But I mean, I guess to Deuce's point, like, they really like Craig Reynolds a lot. I think they like as much how he handled the situation they threw him in, which was insane, as anything else. But like, it seems like they like like him, so they want to give him another look. I would still probably think that that's Jefferson if he's healthy, but if he's not healthy, then I guess, you know, that's a different conversation. But yeah, that could be interesting for sure.
The one thing, and I actually have one or two questions about this that we can get to at the end of the podcast, but the thing I think people have wanted to know, other than like how Jared Goff's looked and how the rookies have looked, what they want to know above all else is how the coaches have looked and how this has gone compared to what Matt Patricia had in place last year. And that's been interesting, too. I mean, I don't think we need to rehash the atmosphere is more positive and more chipper and everything like that. But in terms of what this team needed to accomplish, you know, Campbell said however many months ago that they tried to get joint practices scheduled. They couldn't do it. And, it probably didn't hurt them a ton, like you said, to just be working on their own stuff. But, you know, you do miss some opportunities, and especially with the starters not really playing in the preseason, like, teams have really used those joint practices in place of preseason games for the most part. Like, that's where you get your first team defense, your first team offense, your starting quarterback. Like, that's where you're getting looks at a live opponent. And, you know, Jared Goff's going to go into the season having seen, two series with, you know, limited offensive weapons around him. So I think they probably did miss out, and I'm sure they'll have one on the schedule next year. But In terms of the coaching staff, did they accomplish what they needed to accomplish over the past, you know, month here in Allen Park?
That's a really good question, and it's hard to answer it because there's been guys that have been – they have had some frustration with stops and starts with injuries. And I think that there are some spots where you look at and they're going to tell themselves that we needed to get that position group further along than we got them. Like, but at the same time, I mean, this is what I was going to ask you. Like, the vibe from the building and the players and everything else, you know, a month into this, still seems like, to me, that they're all here for it. And you were here during the Patricia camp, the first one.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, compare and contrast a little bit for us, because for me, to answer your question, so much of it is about, were you able to keep all the guys on board with you? I mean, because in a first regime, like, believe it or not, in modern times, you could lose them early, as we've seen. So, I mean, like, in some ways, I don't think they probably did get everything that they wanted, but in other ways, part of me thinks they did. But I am curious to see, you know, from your experience, but polar opposites here, what you'd compare and contrast it with.
Yeah, I was trying to think back in my head as we were watching, especially like the...
the dog days. Yeah.
Yeah, especially those last couple practices. Right. And the padded one on Tuesday when, like we said, it was 100 and however many degrees. Yeah. They were, mm-hmm. you know, 2 hours in, they're in full pads, and they're doing like a special teams tackling drill.
Yeah,
and horrible. I was just trying to, trying to go through in my mind, like, the reaction to that versus... You know, Matt Patricia's first camp where they maxed out every single day. And then at mm-hmm. the end, they were running the hill and doing sprints. And I it was like 3 days into that camp and there were already columns from unnamed local media folks asking like it. I remember somebody asked Patricia in one of the press conferences, are you working these guys too hard? And Patricia looked like he wanted to stab that person in the face. And so I was just trying to compare to what Campbell did, you know, like, this way different or does it just feel different because everyone's in a better mood? And I think it's a little of both. Probably. I still think they had a couple days like Monday. They practiced for like, what, 40 minutes, 35 minutes. It was just the guys who didn't play in Pittsburgh mostly. So they had a couple days like that where they really, really dialed it back. But when they were in pads and when they wanted to get some stuff done, like they went hard for 2 hours and accomplished a lot out there. So I think that that's you look at how the rookies have settled in. You look at some of the stuff kind of clicking with the defense especially. And I think they probably did accomplish a lot of what they wanted to accomplish.
Yeah.
I don't know how ready they are for week one.
Well, right. That's a separate conversation, really.
I mean, how much do you think, though, that... Because mentioned, Goff hasn't really played, like, and that Deuce Staley just brought this up, and Dan Campbell brought it up. Like, the thing they're worried about with DeAndre Swift is, A, conditioning, B, he hasn't taken snaps with Jared Goff, really, in, like, 3 weeks.
That is important.
Tyrell Williams has been in and out of the lineup. Hockenson missed some time. Rashad Perriman's like kind of back. You know, the offensive line, the one bonus they've had is that the offensive line's basically stayed healthy. And Jamal mm-hmm. Williams has been back there. But otherwise, you know, they have been mixing and matching wide receivers and tight ends and running backs through this whole thing. So I think there's reason to be worried about what that's going to look like in week one because these guys just haven't played together.
That is fair. And, you know, when Campbell said he was worried about Swift the other day, and then Deuce said it too just yesterday on Wednesday, I think, he got asked the same question and he kind of paused for a minute, thought about it, and he said he was concerned about Swift. And it was mostly for the same things that you just said there, the latter part. The, you know, he hasn't worked with Goff, you know, he hasn't been out there for enough, you know, live stuff in structure here with Anthony Lynn. But I also wondered, you know, like Swift missed some time in camp last year too. Seemed to be just fine when it was time to go. And maybe Campbell was like, you got to get back out of here, man. Like, are you hurt or are you injured? I wondered if there was some of that too. But it was just in a different way, right? Like, I mean, Campbell, it's not, he's not going to stop himself, I don't think, from challenging guys, but he doesn't do it in like a disrespectful way. this all sort of ties back with the original thing we talked about the staff, but like, it's been interesting to sort of note that and watch that. I think that there's right and reason to be concerned about him, because not number one, he has to get himself back in shape. Number two, all the things you just talked about. But at the same time, he's the most talented player. Like Anthony Lynn said yesterday, he's like, he's a first-round talent. He's the most talented player they have on offense. I think he knows that, and I think maybe there may have been some days, possibly, where he was like, I'm not going to push it, and maybe he didn't need to. But now, at this point in camp, you know, maybe he does. And maybe that's part of the conversation.
Yeah, and Hockenson, you know, TJ Hockenson, I mentioned him being in and out, and he's been working a lot with Jared Goff. There's obviously a pretty good rapport there. And Hockenson, you know, I asked him after one of the practices, like, do you need to play in a game or be out there for extra reps? And he said, well, you know, we didn't have preseason last year, and I did pretty well. So I think, like, some of these guys, you know, are going to show up on some days and be fine. But I do think just because of what this offense is going to have to look like, I think it's going to take some time to settle in, because it's not going to be like, hey, Tyrell Williams, just go win against this guy one-on-one and we'll throw you the ball. It's going to be, you know, we got to put St. Brown in motion, and we got to have both backs on the field, and we got to have the throws got to come out right here. You know, it's got to be a lot of very precise stuff that I don't know how that's going to look right out of the gate. Yeah. But like I said, I think the defense, you know, they've had some injuries too. I mentioned in observations Wednesday, Michael Brocker has played like one snap at the start of an 11-on-11 session Wednesday, and then came back in for one snap at the start of an 11-on-11 session. That's pretty much been all we've seen in those full team sessions that aren't walkthroughs. And so, you know, if he's healthy, he's probably going to play a lot. It sounds like Deshaun Hand's going to be out for a while now. Yeah, Nick Williams missed some time. Anzarike missed time. I mean, it's the same issue up front there to some degree. But otherwise, they've more or less had the 10 or 11 starters in place for all of camp. And so I think that the defense might just be a little bit ahead of the offense in terms of, you know, figuring out what this is going to look like.
Yeah, I would agree with that for sure. I mean, it definitely seems like they've grown more. Even as individuals, if you wanted to part it all the way down, but it's still not without its, you know, we're watching tackling drills yesterday and watching Aubrey Pleasant about throw his hat into the sideline when Will Harris, you know, he lost outside leverage and let the guy cut back inside again. And it's like, there are still things that are showing up, but I think to your point, by and large, you know, and then Will Harris picks a pass off in the end zone later in practice, right? So, like, there are things that are happening there that you can see with some guys that are growing. Some guys know, and we'll talk about that in a second. But, like, I think if you look across the roster, even with some guys like you mentioned, like, Levi has been hurt, but, like, he's looked pretty good when they got him out there healthy again. Barnes was hurt, looked pretty good when they got him healthy again. So, like, guys are coming back and still hanging in there. So, yeah, I mean, there was obviously a lot more room to grow for the defense because they were so bad. But, like, I feel like they've definitely gotten better. I don't think anybody would be able to argue otherwise on that one in camp, for sure. I don't know about offense, but defensively, I think they've certainly gotten better. Yeah, I mean, offensively, I would ask you, like, your impressions of Goff, just like, here we go. I mean, what are they at this point? Because what we've seen some days, you can see it. And what we've seen some days, it's Jared Goff, the guy that we've watched the last couple of years here.
Well, I was going to say, that's kind of what the scouting report is anyway, right? Like, some of the stuff he's going to do really well.
Probably so.
And then I think a few things stand out for me. One is Mark Brunell talked about how he didn't know Jared Goff's arm was as strong as he thinks it is now, having seen it live. Which to me is, that's another one of those things where I'm still trying to adjust, because we've watched Stafford for 12 years. And now you watch Goff and it's like, well, that looked like he threw it underhanded. And it's like, you know, and then, but he's still.
I understand what he's saying, though.
Yeah, and he still has some throws where he had one, I think it was yesterday, the day before, where he ripped one, like, over Reeves Maben to Hockenson in front of a safety. Like, a really good tight window throw. He threw one.
He had another one over Melifondo in the corner that was really good, too.
And he threw one to Swift yesterday in. Up the seam, like, back shoulder, where Anzalone was coverage pretty good. Anzalone just had no chance to get to the ball because of where he placed it. So he makes some throws where it looks legit. And I think if you get Tyrell Williams in there and you get Rashad Perriman in there, maybe there are some chances to get the ball down the field. That was the plan all along. We haven't seen a lot of that because either because of Goff or the blocking or the play calls or the receivers being out or whatever. But there might be some opportunities to do that. I think he's looked really good to Hockenson. I think he's looked good finding the running backs. We have talked about it pretty much every day we've been out there. There are several moments every practice where you're just like, you got to pick up the pace on this process a little bit, man, because he gets stuck back there. You know, that first read is gone. He takes forever to find the second and third read, and he's not really getting out of the pocket unless it's designed for him to get out of the pocket. When he's run, it's been, you know, play action where he's rolling anyway and he doesn't have anything, so he goes. But if he's in the pocket and there's nothing open, he's pretty much just staying in the pocket, and you're either going to get sacked or throw it into trouble there. And so those are the moments I worry about for him as we get to the regular season, because you can see there are going to be some plays where he's going to get sped up. And for the Lions' sake, you just worry what the end results of those plays are going to be.
Yeah, because you want him to be in a pocket. You don't want him running around because he can't. That's the one thing. Right. Like, you don't want him improving on the move. I mean, you can boot him off of outside zone play action and things like that, and they will. But you want him to be able to be confident in his arm to make the throws that, like Chris just talked about. There's a couple every day that he makes that, to Brunell's point, you're like, yeah, that's a first round pick with the arm. You know, he makes the wide hash throws, you know, the deep outs. He can do all that stuff. I'm not convinced that he can't take some of those deeper shots down the middle. But like, the difference, aside from the fact that Stafford's arm is just, you know, in the 99.9 percentile of arm strength, the biggest difference is that Stafford's confidence in his arm is like 5,000% higher than Goff's.
Absolutely.
Goff has like zero still. Like, that's what I have noticed from him out there most days, where it's like, there are the days where he makes a couple of those really nice throws, and then there's a couple other times where you're saying, Chris, like, he's in the pocket and he's got somebody like on a deep route, one-on-one, and he doesn't take it. Like, it's like, take a chance, man. Like, you might surprise yourself. And he doesn't do it. And it ends up being the thing where we see Pat throw it out of bounds or whatever. And that's the reason why, you know, the Rams thing fell apart. But it's also something that we're just, I don't know if we're going to be able to fully see it until he gets out there in a game. Because, like, that's for him to overcome, I think. You know, I really do. I think that there's, and, you know, people aren't wrong. When you design a passing concept in the NFL, I mean, you can look at every single one of them. They're all different. But like, they're all the same to a degree. You've got an underneath route, you've got a mid route, and you've got a deep one on every single thing you do. So once in a while, you've got to take chances to keep people honest. And if he can't do that, it's going to be a very frustrating year. So, you know, that to me is where it's at with Goff. It's like, where's his confidence, and is it going to get better? Because right now, I'm having a hard time seeing that.
Yeah, I agree. I think a lot of it's going to come down to what Anthony Lynn can draw up here, because you mentioned those deep shots. Like, that's going to have to be the first read. They have to design it so the ball is going deep, because he's not going to, I mean,
right, exactly.
When you're watching those plays unfold in practice, again, it's not really fair, I don't think, probably, to compare him to Stafford, because they're different quarterbacks, they have different arms, but
of course
there are plays out there still where I will be watching, and, you know, you'll see a deep route develop late, or you'll see something where he's rolling out, there's a receiver comes open on the backside, and I'm thinking to myself, well, that, you know, find that guy and throw the ball. That's just not going to happen right now with Jared Goff. With Stafford, those were where you automatically looked on some of those plays. Like, if he got out of the pocket, you're looking to the, whoever's running the deepest route. If he's out of the pocket, whoever's the deepest is getting the ball. Or like,
yeah, you know, the thing where he like braces his body to like gathers his feet under him or whatever. Yeah,
right. And so it's just going to be a different. I mean, I think we knew it all along, but it's going to be different. And I think you're going to see when we get into the regular season, Jared Goff is going to be fine with, if you have a first and 10 pass and nothing's open and he can get you to second and 8 by throwing one underneath, that's what he's going to do. So maybe that works with this team. Maybe if they can, I mean, the trick there is, as I said, if he can be that, there's a thin line between being a game manager, quote unquote, and just turning the ball over all the time, you know, like, and getting stuck and getting in trouble. So I think that if he can manage the game and get you little 3-4 yard chunks when there's nothing open, that's okay. But if it's, if he's getting stuck in the pocket and he's panicking and throwing it to whoever's the closest to him, I mean, we saw it. We've seen it. Linebackers, cornerbacks, they're going to start jumping some of these and taking them back the other way.
Right, and this is why game managers don't work in the NFL and do work in college, because in college you have rosters where talent levels are imbalanced, and here you don't, because sometimes you need – there's a thin line between being a game manager and a guy who doesn't do enough to go get the job done when it's time to go get the job done. Like, that's – you know, when you talked to the thing, it was a great point about – we're not going to see the improv shots that Stafford will come out of. But right now, what concerns me more is that we're not seeing in structure him taking what we would even call, like, there are times where it's like, I don't even know if I'd call that a chance. That's just a, you know, it's a throw, make the throw. It's a, you know, it's not careless. It's, that's a deep shot. You've got to keep people honest. You've got to do more than just check the ball down. And like that, you know, that, and maybe that's just what they're working on. I don't know, right? We've seen pretty much everything though, so it's hard to say otherwise. And it's just one of those things where you can't realistically exist in the NFL asking your offense to go 18 plays, 75 yards every time. You're just not going to be able to do it. I mean, it's just not going to be a thing that works. So he's going to have to get him out of jams. He's going to have to get him out of spots. That's what quarterbacks in this league do. And that's where the confidence thing is going to come into. And that's going to be the big question and the one that sort of tells his story here, I think.
Well, let's transition over a little bit. We got final cuts coming up on Tuesday. They got to get rid of 27 more guys here. Yeah. So let's not – we'll have a roster projection up after the final preseason game, so sure, we won't give away everything here. But let's kind of talk through where we think there might be spots still available against the Colts and into this weekend, because Dan Campbell said – someone asked him how close they were, and he said, well, we probably know about 80% of what this final roster is going to be. And so you just do the math, and there's, you know, maybe 10, 12
somewhere
spots there available. So – where do we think those are? Which positions are still up for grabs here as they get into the preseason finale?
Well, receiver seems to be
that's at least
completely
one or two
unspoken for at this point, outside of, you know, Amon-Ra St. Brown and Khalif Raymond, and I guess Tyrell Williams. But, like, that in general seems to be completely up in the air still. Some stuff, the third tight end. Right, some of the backup offensive line stuff. And then again, like, you flip it to their side, and it's like your linebackers beyond the starting two, and you know that Barnes is going to be part of that conversation, and Reeves Maben is probably going to be a special teamer. So that's still. What else do you do beyond that? And then do you make any other changes, you know, in your secondary? Which maybe does that involve? Do you have to cut deeper somewhere else than you want to because you want to add more players to help the roster? And that's, I think, ultimately, because that's what we're going to be talking about here, I think, when it comes right down to it, is are they going to add more, or are they going to go with what they've got and just cut the obvious kind of 10 or 12 guys that we're talking about here?
Yeah, I mean, receiver's the one that's been interesting for a while now. And, you know, I tweeted out something Wednesday night, like, well, I think the Lions should hang on to Quintez Cephus. I don't know if he's someone you can cut. And people seem genuinely surprised that I even mentioned him as a possible cut. But like you said, after those top three, like, Tyrell Williams is going to be your one. St. Brown's here. Khalif Raymond's been one of the best players in camp. So those are three.
Yeah.
We're going to take five. I don't think you're carrying six receivers on this team. So you're taking five. I still think they'd prefer to have Rashad Perriman's skill set there if he can do anything at all. We haven't seen really any of it, but I think they still would like to have the bigger vertical threat on the outside. And then you have Cephus, who's been solid and can play inside out. And you have Tom Kennedy, who's led them in receiving the first 2 weeks. And Javon McKinley. I mean, there's like four or five guys for two spots here, and I don't think any of it's set yet. So this this is one where maybe this last preseason game does win somebody a job.
I think it could. And I think that Breshad Perriman...
Where do you stand on him? Do you think he's in? What do you think's happening with him?
I wouldn't today. I mean, if it was... I don't know what they're going to do, though. You know, like, I think that you said it. Anthony Lynn clearly prefers... body type wise, skill set wise, that's why they brought him in here. You know, Perriman's what he can give you. And Tom Kennedy, for all that he's done in camp, which is sort of speaks to where this football team is, right? That he's been able to be the leading receiver in camp.
Yeah, right.
You know, other than being a guy who can give you a lot on special teams and, you know, maybe give you something here and there in a game, can he give you enough to hold a spot over someone like Perriman? But also, if you're Dan Campbell and you're preaching to your team, like, you know, there's no favors out here. Everybody's out here doing their own. Like, then how is Perriman still on the team? If that's what we're talking about, and Kennedy's at home, like, so those are conversations too, I guess, that probably have to be had. But also, the NFL's the NFL, and if it's this guy can run a 4.3 and he's 6 foot whatever, and you're not, then maybe that's what it comes down to. I don't know, but he certainly hasn't done enough to earn a roster spot. I don't think anybody would argue that. He hasn't been healthy, and even when he was healthy, we haven't seen anything. So, no idea there. But then, that's only one of the things that you're talking about. Because, like, there's still another, even if they kept Perriman.
Yeah.
Who knows? It's not a battle of, like, man, like, they've got eight great receivers who are duking it out. It's like, no, they're looking for, like, two and a half that are, like, dependable. And they've got two that they like a lot in Raymond and Amon-Ra St. Brown, but, like, they're kind of the same guy, number one, and, like, that's it. So they're both unproven, too. I don't know. It's been an adventurous camp for the receiver core here, the health and everything else.
And that's why I say I think that they'd still like to have Perriman's body type skill set for the top unit because – and maybe it's McKinley. I mean, McKinley gives you some of that stuff, too. Maybe he's the guy who surprises everyone and wins a job. But when they don't have Perriman out there, their top three has been Tyrell Williams, Khalif Raymond, and Amon-Ra St. Brown, with either St. Brown or Khalif Raymond then having to play
outside,
on the outside, which St. Brown can do it, but it's not his best spot. And Khalif Raymond can do it, but he's 5'8" if we're generous. Yeah, right. And so maybe he can get you one of those deep shots, but I don't know that he's going to go get off press coverage if he's playing outside. And so I think you still would prefer to have someone like Perriman. Maybe Cephas is that guy. I mean, he's a...
That's what physical. I was wondering.
But if you go back, like when we were in OTAs and stuff, we were talking about... that was sort of the first time we looked at this roster and looked at what they were doing at receiver and said, well, I don't know if Cephas fits here anymore. Like, this is not
the
type of player that they have been looking for at receiver. And so I don't know. I mean, it's also one of those spots where you mentioned kind of trying to read between the lines on the DeAndre Swift comment from Dan Campbell. Been trying to read between the lines on, you know, Campbell said twice just this week, that wide receiver room's up for grabs. Is he trying to get into Breshad Perriman's head a little bit there? That he needs to do something? And then he made the comment Wednesday. Like,
has to be.
Yeah, we want to reward guys who have played well and who have produced, but you also can't build your team. There's just some guys who are really good here, and you know they physically won't be able to do it. And it's not fair to them, and it hurts and all those things because they've done everything you asked, but you just can't build your whole team off guys who are physically limited. And so is that Tom Kennedy? I mean, I'm trying to read between the lines on who he's talking about here, because I think there are going to be some of these guys who have played well in camp and in the preseason. Tavante Beckett's another one. Like, he's been great, but Campbell also said, we got to get him, like, into the weight room for a year. I mean, I think receiver to me is going right down to the wire on Tuesday before they figure out what they're doing there.
I think Campbell is definitely, like, begging Breshad Perriman to do something here in this last, because part of that, I think, is no coach in the world of sports likes to cut anybody, of course. They all hate it. But, like, He is like, every time someone mentions the word cut in that media tent, Campbell like does a full body cringe. Like, he hates, it's like, he is miserable. Like, I can't, for people that weren't there the day that he had, and obviously Mulebox, a different situation. But he was like, Chris, you were there. He was completely miserable. It was the most uncomfortable.
Legitimately choked up.
The most uncomfortable we've seen him. And I would also say to you guys that the day before, when they were clearly mulling over that, he also looked like he was completely uncomfortable. And like, it's definitely something that he is, the cuts and everything in general are definitely something I think he's still adjusting to as a coach. But yeah, I think they're begging Perriman, like, man, I don't want to look at Tom Kennedy and tell him you're cut because you've done nothing and you get a spot because you're faster than him. You know what I mean? But I'm going to maybe have to do that and it's going to suck. But I think right now more of it's like, hey, man, could you like finish strong here, please, and justify the fact that we brought you in here and paid you $2 million? I think most of it's about that
right now.
Because reality is reality on Kennedy. I mean, like, if you keep him, what are you getting? You know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, he's done this before in camp, right? Like, he's looked like this before. It's not the first time. So
I think some of the conversation there is, I guess one of the benefit of having the roster in the shape that it's in is that if you, the 27 guys you cut on Tuesday are probably not going to drum up a ton of interest around the league. So if you want to cut someone and then bring him back to the practice squad, you might have a chance to do that, even with Tom Kennedy playing well. Maybe you could do that with Tom Kennedy. Rashad Perriman, if you cut him, he's gone. He'll be on the be out that day and won't look back. So that's probably part of the conversation too. I mentioned Beckett. You said, as you said, I think there probably are four of those off-ball linebacker spots locked up: Anzalone, Collins, Barnes, and Reeves-Maben. So, does Jelani Tabai get in there? Does one of these young guys get in? Or do they just go with four because of the type of defense that they're playing where they're, you know, they have the two outside backers are Okwara and Flowers, and they're going to be in nickel and dime all the time anyway. So do you need, I mean, a lot of that's the special teams discussion too, because that's a position where you probably would like to carry some guys who can help you on special teams, but I don't know. I don't know what happens beyond those top four, and I think Jelani Tavai is the one we've talked about the most over the last month.
I would say if Tavai makes the team, it would be solely because he's earned it through special teams, because I don't know how you play him on defense. I don't know what he's giving you. You know, I don't know with what Aaron Glenn wants to do defensively. You know, I don't know what he's giving you that somebody like Pittman wouldn't give you maybe better. You know, and that's just the honest truth of it. I mean, like, if he makes the team, it'll be because they trust him more. And, you know, it's notable on, I want to say Tuesday when they were still in pads, full pads anyway, this week. He was on, like, every single team, special teams team. Tobias was. He was on punt. He was on punt return. He was on kickoff, kick return. I mean, he was on all of them. So if he's like a guy that they're like, he's a savvy special teams guy and we don't have enough of those and we want to keep him for that, that's what his role will be. Not ideal for a second round pick, but at this point, I don't know how else he makes the team, because if it's strictly about we want him to be part of the linebacking core, no, the answer has to be no. He's not, it's not going to work with what they want, you know, to happen here. You can't have an inside linebacker in this defense that can only play on first down, right? He just, and there's nothing else. And I don't even know how well we're talking about him playing on first down.
He doesn't play.
Right?
That's the thing. He doesn't even play well on those spots. Right. So,
I mean, I would ask you the same thing. I mean, I think he has to be cut, but I understand why maybe they haven't yet. And I understand why maybe Tavai is one of the last guys cut. Maybe they say we're going to wait until the last possible second with you because we're going to make sure we give every opportunity we can before we have to make a decision. But I get all that, but I just don't see a way that he's on this team unless they're desperate for another special teams ace. And I don't know that he is a special teams ace. You know, I don't know that. He's not Reeves-Maben. So
no. I mean, he has done well in the special teams drills. I will give him that.
Sure.
He's done a nice job.
He plays like his ass off and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. So he looks like he can be competitive there. But yeah, I don't, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it's, I think we're going to find out with some of these guys where the line is between, you know, what they've done in camp, what their effort level is, like how much they can trust him in the locker room. I mean, some of that is Tavai's a guy that I think they really do like, and I think that's why you've seen him get so many opportunities. They're just praying that it clicks, and it hasn't. So now, I don't know. You're in this kind of no man's land with him because I think Pittman and Beckett both have been better.
Right. Beckett for sure.
Probably. Yeah. And Pittman played like 20 special team snaps last week, and Beckett certainly could be a special teams guy for you. That they said like, he probably could play special teams right now, and I think it's actually at linebacker where they're
and I might even prefer him. Yeah,
bulk on him. So I don't know. Yeah, I we've also talked about this. I think like that initial 53, there might be like five or six that get flipped over the day after when they waiver claim some guys. Because I don't know that there are 53 guys here that are good enough to play in the NFL in week one, frankly. Like there's a lot of guys who are kind of fringe players, but you can't have 30 of those guys on your roster. You know, you can have like 10 of those who only play special teams.
Your ideal situation would be the final 10 is like a battle between 15 NFL-ready players. And it's right now it's a battle between like a two.
Right. Because it's linebacker. We're talking like cornerback. Basically, if Melifonwu has to be your number three and there's no one. I mean, maybe Mike Ford. Mike Ford's another guy who I think is going to make it exclusively because of how good he is on special teams. Yeah. He's been terrible at cornerback. Terrible. And they keep bumping him further and further down the depth chart there.
There's nowhere else to go.
No one, I mean, safety too. Like Jalen Elliott has played all right. CJ Moore is a great special teams player.
Right.
He's probably going to make the roster because of that. The offensive line is a nightmare behind the top five. Like if you lose one guy, maybe
they have
Tyrell
Crosby,
Crosby
and that's it. That's it.
And he's been hurt.
I know.
So, like, I think Evan Brown, yes, you could trust him at center because he's played in this league before, and maybe Matt Nelson could get you, like, a few snaps, but that, I don't know what they do. Like, it feels like they could add one or two guys there. So, this is going to be really interesting over the next week. I keep waiting for him, frankly, to swing, like, a seventh-round pick for someone.
Yeah.
Just to get another guy that they say, all right, that we'll check that box. We have our backup guard now. And we haven't really seen that yet. So it could be kind of a chaotic 3 or 4 days here.
I think it's going to be. I have to think so, right? Like, I think that if it's not, I guess, then they're just going to ride it out with some of these guys and be like, whatever. We're going to trust Evan Brown. How about that? We're going to see what happens. You know, like that, maybe that's just what they do. But I also kind of wonder if this wasn't just the plan all along. Hey, let's just go through camp and see. Let's just see what we got with everybody that we have, because that's part of the process here too. Like, part of the process on a guy like when you're having a conversation about somebody like Will Harris, which we do a lot, is if you're a new staff, you have to turn over every stone there, you know. And he's a third round pick or whatever it was. I mean, like, you can't just toss him away and say like we got to sign some guy off the scrap heap from wherever and get rid of Harris, you know, immediately. You know, so I understand riding that out right to the end with most of these guys that we've been talking about so much. But like, yeah, when it comes down to it, what's your priority at this point? You know, is it some of these situations, I think too, that we've talked about, Chris, like you might need to add another safety who knows what he's doing just so that your entire secondary doesn't lose all confidence when things are getting tough, right? Like those are also conversations that I find myself wondering about, you know?
What about quarterback? Do you think they're keeping three there?
I think you have to now because of COVID. And I think if they kept two, it would still be Boyle. And I think maybe people will be mad about that. But, I mean, they still seem excited that he's here. I haven't seen – Lynn talked yesterday about that. So – and he also noted that Boyle had to go against Pittsburgh starters and Blau didn't, right? So – I think they'll probably keep three. Do you disagree, or do you disagree with me on Blau over Boyle? Because I don't know about that one either.
No, I mean, I think they'll keep three.
Yeah, I mean,
Blau's
it's
been
hard.
Better, though. That's the thing. Like, I think he's been the better quarterback.
He has, but, like, I don't know. I mean, Boyle physically is a better prospect still. And he's, I think they're the same age, more or less. So, you know, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if they're going to cut Boyle.
That's fair. Yeah, I don't know. It's a hard one to read at that position. Maybe they just keep, I think I've been operating all along like they were going to keep all three. So maybe that's the way they go.
I think so too.
Yeah.
I think they will. What about Stenberg? What's your thoughts on him at this point?
Maybe he's your backup guard. That might be your guy.
Do you think, I mean, he could be one you talked about. Guys winning jobs on Friday night. Maybe that's him.
It could be. I mean, I think he's been better for sure, which is...
Yeah, he's been better.
Something.
Got into a fight yesterday too, right?
I think he was right in there with Matt Nelson and Rashad Berry and all those guys.
So there you go.
Yeah, I don't know. He's a hard one for me because I talk about those not having an interior guy, and Crosby's been playing some there and Matt Nelson's been playing some there, but I don't know. How early do you want to bail on a young prospect who maybe can give you something if you keep him around?
And I think you said this like 2 weeks ago when we were talking about this, like on the show, we've seen nothing from him. Like, we've seen Logan Stenberg for two preseason games. That's it.
Yeah.
He's done. We just don't know, you know, in a lot of ways.
And he said that too. You know, he said,
yes,
like I played two snaps last year. We didn't have a preseason. Camp was kind of all over the place, and then I didn't play at all in the regular season. I didn't really take any reps with the first team, so
didn't do anything. Yeah,
it was a lost year for him. I mean, he's like a redshirt freshman at this point, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know if you want to just toss in, and if it's a situation where it's like, well, no one else here is good. I mean, so do you just keep the young guy? And but it's also it creates these issues as you go down the road, where there's certain guys that you're not going to want to give up on that you might have to because, maybe somebody comes open and available too that we haven't thought about that would be an enticing ad for them. Is there anybody out there, would there be a cut you could see them exploring that would be someone who would just be more than a stopgap? Or would you think like these are just guys that they'd be looking for that are just like, whatever, just get us through the year and we can move on in that situation?
It's a good question. I mean, I think it probably depends on...
obviously, the situation, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think if there's a young guy that they're familiar with, you could look at him. Like, so that's the Rams, Saints, Eagles, Chargers. Like, if there's a young guy on one of those rosters who gets the boot,
right,
and you could say, well, we still could develop him and be here for a while, I think that they could take a look. Otherwise, I don't know the benefit of maybe a corner or safety.
That's what I was wondering.
Or offensive line. I guess there's some benefit in having a stopgap just to make sure you're not flailing all season.
Yeah.
But I don't know how many of those guys you want to bring in versus, just using Stenberg or...
yeah.
I don't
know. Or Will Harris. Or if it's just a matter of
or CJ Moore or Elliott or something.
Yeah. Put them out there and see what happens. Like, I mean, maybe that's what, but until you can anymore, I guess. Maybe that's what it comes down to. Because that's another thing too, is like there's no record expectation here. It's not like they have to go win 11 games. So I mean, if they can experiment with things too and see what happens, I mean, maybe that's what they do. I mean, nothing's really final in that sense,
All right, let's hit a couple of these questions we got from Twitter, and then we'll get out of here. So we had a couple about free agency, which I think we kind of hit. But it seems like there's been a lot of buzz on Khalif Raymond. What are the realistic expectations for him this year?
Yeah, like someone asked whoever it was. I think it was Anthony Lynn. They asked him yesterday, right, about the outside receivers. He's like, it's Raymond. And somebody's like, outside? He's like, yes. And it was like, yeah, he's been pretty good, you know? And it's been impossible to sort of ignore. I mean, there's still part of me that's kind of like, is he just getting open because the corners can't cover him? Or are we going to see more of that in games? I don't know, but it's been impossible to ignore that he's been their most consistent guy, I guess. I mean, probably top to bottom in terms of getting open, finishing plays. He's run different routes. He's made, deep shots, as you said. So I would think he's going to play a lot. I don't know how else we look at that. I mean, would you disagree with that?
No, I think they've been using him outside with some of this stuff. And so I think
I don't know how that's going to go.
He's played a little bit there in his career. But, he's been really good. I don't know what the volume will be for him in this offense, but he's been really, really good for them. And so I think even just as someone that
Goff can throw the ball to when things are kind of breaking down.
Maybe, and he's a great example, too, for the team, I think. Like, he came in here and just grinded a job out, you know, like out of nothing. Just was a guy who just showed up and just stole a job. You know, I mean, that's what he did. And I think that you reward that and you let everybody else know, like, we're going to reward that here. And, you know, I think that he's earned that for sure.
So another one here, based on preseason and training camp, would you say you're more or less optimistic about this team than before and why?
Well, I mean, are we talking about this for this season or are we talking about like long term? Because for this season, it's the same. I don't expect them to be good and I don't know what that looks like, but I mean, like, I don't expect them to be good. It's about what I thought it would be in terms of their talent level and the questions they have and all that stuff. I don't think I was surprised by any of the things that we've seen from that standpoint. Long term, I'm still, you know, I'm still on the hopeful train for them because, like we've talked about before, all of those draft picks to this point have done something that has been encouraging. The quarterback situation is still hanging there, but like that's kind of how I look at it. That's an interesting question, though, because I would ask you the same thing. Are they worse or a little bit better than you thought they would be for this year? And then overall, as we end camp here, I mean, that's a fair question, right? What's your read and gauge as we're about to hit month 9 of Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell?
I think the defense could be better than I thought it was going to be, but
yeah, that's
fair. Say that in acknowledging that the secondary still could be a problem for them a lot of weeks.
Still could be the worst in the league.
Right. I think still the easily. Front seven could be pretty good. And we had a question about whether Flowers and the Okoras and all those guys have been making the transition to the outside linebacker spot. And I think it's looked pretty smooth so far, especially Romeo Okora looks pretty comfortable there. He's been in the backfield all the time. He looks pretty good dropping. Like, I think that that's going to be fine for those guys. Julian Okora is certainly athletic enough to do it. Austin Bryant's been really good. So I think that has worked. I think I'm with you. Like, this to me still feels like it's going to be a rough year and a more positive outlook beyond that. So I guess that's good. I guess that's what you want.
It's hard this to, year, right? It's hard to look at still. And I guess we'll see in these last round of cuts. It's hard to look at anything they've done from a transactional standpoint or, you know, choices they made for who they want to develop and who they don't. Sort of look at any of that and argue, but it's also like a lot of those have still been sort of obvious decisions, and some of that might continue here as they go forward. But if you make the obvious decision, you know, hey, it's better than we've seen in some times here in the past, so we can't argue with that.
All right, one more here from Jeremy Girardi, I believe is how we pronounce this. What's the read in the organization of, he mentioned a Mike Lombardi critique, which I haven't heard, so I can't speak directly to it, but of Chris Spielman acting like a quasi coach on this team, and that's something we've noticed throughout camp. Do you,
Mark DeLeon's best friend?
What do you think about that? What do you think about Spielman being so involved out there when he's not technically part of this coaching staff?
Well, I would say that we don't see everything, so I don't know what it's like every day. I don't know if he's overstepping or not. Or if he's just kind of out, what, you know, I'm hanging out and want to see what's going on. And part of that is also, I think, what he's being paid to do, right? Is to sort of monitor what's happening here as best he can and report back to Rod Wood, I guess. That's his job. So, but no, I mean, it's been no, I mean, he's been out there almost every day. I think. I'm sure there's been some days where he wasn't out there, but he's, the days that he is out there, he, spends time holding the bag, you know, or whatever for DeLeon if they're doing linebacker drills or picking up footballs or whatever, talking to Derek Barnes or whatever it is. He's not in the way, but I mean, he's definitely around, and he's Spielman. I mean, like, this is about what I figured it would be, right? I think that's part of that too. I think is you have to kind of know his personality, right? Like, that's to me, part of that is funny because it's just Spielman being around football. I think that's what he likes to do.
I mean, they had to know what they were getting into.
Yeah, I think so.
Like, he wasn't going to sit in his office while they were having training camp.
God, no. He's going to be absolutely out there, not. So. Yeah, right.
And I think, like you said, he's been in Barnes' ear for 4 or 5 months. So as long as the messages there are consistent with what he's getting from Mark DeLeon and from Aaron Glenn and everyone, that's a big help. That's an
experienced
NFL linebacker who knows what he's talking about. So, I would also say that I get the sense that this coaching staff and regime would not hesitate to talk to someone if they were overstepping. Yeah. I feel Campbell, and probably in a very respectful way, I feel like he would get on that pretty quickly.
You gotta get
I don't think this is like, oh my God, what? Spielman's out here again? What's he doing out here? Like, I think that they are fine with
it. Yeah, that's the best point to make, is I don't think Dan Campbell or Aaron Glenn or Anthony Lynn would have any problem being like, respectfully, sir, I need you to leave the room right now. I really don't. I don't think that any of those three would have a problem with that. And I don't know that that's happening either. I don't know that it's to a point where that is a situation or whatever. But I can see where people would maybe guess, right, or think that just on the outside looking in. But that's the best point to make, is what Chris just said. Like, I don't think the staff would have trouble, and nor do I think Spielman would care if they were like, hey, man, like, he would understand, I would think, in almost every instance, I would assume.
I mean, there are a lot of big personalities on this coaching staff, and that's going to be one of the things to see, is just how they interact the rest of the way. Like, it's all fine now, and but yeah, we'll see. I don't know. We'll see.
I don't think that there'd be a problem with that. I really don't. Like, I mean, you look around at just the guys that are out there every day, like, I don't think people have problem communicating those types of things with each other. I mean, you could even look at a guy like Lomas. Lomas is out there every day. Like, if Spielman was like doing things that, if he was getting overzealous, I could even see like Lomas being like, you need to back off, Spielman. Like, I think that's just how it is now, you know? Like, I think people are more free to speak, you know, and free to share their thoughts. And that includes everybody, I think, and they're all listened to. I think that's been the theme, you know.
And it's still Chris Spielman. Like, it's not like Rod Wood.
It's Spielman, Derek for Barnes God's off to the sake. Side. Yeah, right. What's wrong with that? Like, it's like when we see Sewell stop and talk to Lomas. Like, nobody's complaining about that. It's just, you know, I think it's fine. I think as long as, like you said, as long as it's consistent with what the message is that the staff is giving them, I mean, you know, he's one of the best players that's ever played here. There's nothing wrong with that.
All right, so we will be, I don't know, are we going to record Tuesday next week? People keep yelling at us because of this.
I think we have to next week. Well, no, we don't either.
I don't know. One more week. Next week we're clear to record whenever we feel like.
We will record next week. How about that? We don't know what day. But when the first Wednesday, game week
they,
happens.
They have cuts on Tuesday, so I don't want to commit.
we'll keep Tuesdays during the first game week and from there on out.
Yeah, we'll let you know next week. They have cuts Tuesday, final preseason game coming up this Friday against the Colts. We'll see a lot of those backups trying to win jobs. And then, we'll be back next week to break down sort of what happened with those cuts, what happened in that game, and sort of where things are as they head into the regular season. So
here we go.
I'm glad camp's over, personally.
I am glad camp's over, too. I like watching all that stuff more than probably most people, even including in a week like this where I've got 37 different stories publishing at the same time. But, like, yeah, I was like, okay. Yesterday, by, like, the second hour there, I was like, okay, we can wrap this up. I think we're done. And I think the team was pretty much done with it, too, to be quite honest. But, you know.
You get to a point of diminishing returns on all of that, I think. So, all right. Well, yeah, like I said, we'll be back next week, probably Wednesday next week after cuts happen, so we can get a feel for where the roster's at. And then every Tuesday, once the Lions get into the regular season. So that'll be, you know, the week before the opener and then on through the whole season. It'll be every Tuesday. So any other changes we'll let you know about on Twitter. You can find us the usual spots, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify. Rate us, review us, subscribe. Let us know if you have any further questions on Twitter. We can bring those up in the show next week, too. So we'll end it there. Thanks, everyone, for listening. For Nick, I'm Chris, and we'll talk to you soon.